Hey everyone, welcome back to season 5, episode 1 of Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. So, me and Nick had a few month long hiatus, but we're back and we're ready to produce more content, aren't we, Nick?
Yes, we are.
So, before we start today's episode, we had a quick announcement to make. So, me and Nick here, we're sad to announce, but Kluka.org is shutting down and has shut down by the time this episode will be out. It was a good venture that me, Nick, and Tej had, but unfortunately we just didn't generate enough interest and enough partnerships to justify purchasing the domain name and hosting for another year. So it was a fun project while it lasted, and we're grateful to all those who supported us, viewed our articles, listed, and our partners. We want to give a special thanks to them.
And otherwise, I think we have a great episode online today. So today's topic is going to be about what if the Great Depression never happened? And when we say, what if the Great Depression never happened, we mean less severely. Because the Great Depression, of course, was leading up for quite a bit of time, as you know, typically during a 20-year cycle. There's a 20-year cycle of good times, and then there's a recession. It's typically what's expected by economists. However, the Great Depression was something abnormal, in a sense, where the United States suffered such a devastating crash. And it's not just from the stock market. We're also talking about numbers such as 25% unemployment. And I believe it was almost about half of all African Americans, one in two, were unemployed in the United States, which is an absolutely absurd number. Now, it could be even higher from what I know, but 50% is from what I know, at least, is the correct number here. But 25% of unemployment is probably one of the biggest factors of it. There's also the fact that there was deflation going on, which was a big part of which FDR's reaction would go into. And lastly, of course, I think the one thing also to mention would be that a lot of banks shut down. And with a lot of these banks came bank rushes where people would rush in to get all their life savings. And unfortunately, since banks had lots of other prior investments, in this case it would be the stock market, which during the 1920s, the stock market was heavily unregulated. It's similar to how in 2008, we had the whole stock market crash with housing, in a sense, such as Presidents Bill Clinton, George Bush, but enough about that. So today we're talking about what if the Great Depression wasn't as extreme. So I think in order to start off with that, we have to change who the 1928 Republican nominee is. Because coming off in 1928, I think it's important to note, and it has been noted by historians, that Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover were not good on good terms in a sense. Herbert Hoover and Calvin Coolidge were not the best of friends in a sense, to where I believe Calvin Coolidge was not a fan of what Herbert Hoover employed, since he was less laissez-faire like Calvin Coolidge was, and Herbert Hoover was more of a interventionist, at least in economic principles. And so I think, in a sense, if we're going to go off in 1928, I don't want to say we should nominate Calvin Coolidge, since he would probably still just, because I believe he did reject it originally in 1928. However, I do think we should find another candidate who is suitable for that election, who would maybe fit those principles similarly to Calvin Coolidge. So who do you think, Rohan?
So, Nick, I would say probably Frank Loudon, which is a former governor of Illinois. So he was also one of the preferred candidates by the Republican Party during the convention in 1928. And I think if we're not going to go for Hoover, I think Loudon was the second next best choice.
So Loudon would probably be the next best choice for the party, in a sense, to where Coolidge would most likely approve, since he was a well-known conservative. And he was actually offered the nomination for vice president in 1924, but he had declined the nomination. So I feel like he probably would be the most common sense nomination, in a sense, here. And you do bring up a good point there, Rohan. And he actually had the second most popular votes in that 1928 presidential primary, with around 31.2% of the popular vote, with around 1.3 million here. So with Herbert Hoover out of the picture and Loudon winning the presidency in 1928, because Al Smith definitely stood no chance, especially being the first Catholic nominated for the presidency. I think we see here, in a sense, we're still going to see a recession, of course. Whether I would say it's probably going to be more short-term, in a sense, because I think one of the big things we must move on to is Herbert Hoover. So Herbert Hoover is a interesting fellow. He was the Secretary of Commerce under Calvin Coolidge, and actually under Warren Harding too. He was also a engineer during the time period as well, which is what he was more well-known as. And so with Herbert Hoover failing to reach the presidency in a sense, which in this scenario, he just wouldn't run for the presidency since Coolidge would have more control. But let's just say Coolidge convinces him not to run and instead Loudon's nominated. So without Hoover, I would say coming into 1929, 1930, you could say that a lot of the blame for the Great Depression can be blamed on Hoover. Now, you can debate historically whether or not, in the sense that, oh, it was the stock market and the Republicans decentralizing and lowering the amount of government in society during the 1920s. However, there are economic numbers that do suggest differently, in a sense. And I'm not talking about with the whole, Republicans are not free of blame. It was Hoover's fault for starting the Great Depression. And I don't think any historian would really shift the blame off of that, in a sense. And I'm not calling us historians in any way, but you could just generally say through just simple oversight, it was Hoover's fault. So coming into 1930, we had the Smoot-Hawley Tariff, which with the Smoot-Hawley Tariff, it was a terrible way to deal with the Depression, especially if you're trying to get out of one as well. So it's important to mention that as well. So what do you think here in this scenario with a Loudon presidency?
Well, I think that it's important that because a tariff of any way, shape, or form is going to hurt the economy and overall just hurt the recession, make it like more of a recession. So I think that Loudon is not going to implement a tariff or any kind of, like, for that matter, really protectionist policy, because I believe that those policies, especially in a recession, are going to hurt the economy. And that's the exact opposite of what we want to do. We want to stimulate the economy. We want to stimulate spending, right?
That comes through intervention in that case.
No, yeah, I know, but forget about, even if we don't do like direct government spending, but if we stop tariffs, right, foreign goods will be cheap. There will be cheaper foreign goods for certain products, correct? And consumers can afford that, so they'll start spending, and there's more money flowing around, right?
Well, I don't know, even would say it's just that. I would also say in the fact that it's also American goods that are being able to be shipped over. And I think one of the more important things here, and I think this could be accomplished with Hoover as well, but Hoover was also a proponent of this tariff as well. And while while it's not clear that Loudon would be exactly not supportive of it, we could also potentially say that in this circumstance, I think anybody could say, oh yeah, for the most part would say, oh yeah, this tariff makes no sense, especially if you're looking economically wise.
Yeah, and you know, Nick, what you're saying about American manufacturers shipping overseas, 100%, because when we tariff goods from, for example, let's say Britain's going to place a retaliatory tariff on us. So we're just hurting our own economy now, because now American companies can't ship to Britain cheaply, and Britain can't ship cheaply to us. So we're just hurting our own economy, right? So if we don't have these tariffs on these countries, they're not going to tariff us. And then we can easily share goods. And so, for example, we can get American producers can get foreign dollars, and so they can have a solid revenue stream, and American consumers can have more options, more variety, and more affordable options.
So yeah, typically, as we know, is that if you do want to bring in more of a product, you should be lowering tariffs. And if you do want to get political nowadays, you can say, in a sense, is that one of the reasons why we do have this baby formula crisis is because of the fact is that I feel that both the Trump administration, if there was going on right now, and the Biden administration currently going on, just have a lack of, just does, do not want to get rid of tariffs on at least baby formula, which in this circumstance would make a lot of sense considering the fact that they have heavy restrictions on these baby formulas. And if there's a lot of bizarre things about it, if you look more into it, but let's not get into that more. So let's get into more like what the foreign impacts maybe. And I think one of the big foreign impacts with this tariff not happening is that I don't think we would see Nazism rise, in a sense. And what I mean by Nazism rising is I don't think that Hitler would come to power, especially in the way he did. I don't even see him getting democratically elected. And this is mainly because of the fact is that one of the big things that the Smoot-Hawley Tariff did as well is that it also cut off basically the whole system that was going on since the 1920s, where Germany would pay their debts to France and England. France and England would pay their debts back to America. America would also loan money out to Germany as well. So while America might be hurt and Germany might be hurt a little bit more in this scenario, I don't think they would be hurt as badly as they were come 1932, and allows for the rise of Mustache Man, of course. And I think that's one of the most major impacts we'll see foreign-wise, at least.
Yeah, I think that's huge, 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 because Like Germany, the Weimar Republic was stable only by a thread, really, just like this triangle, if you will, of money just being moved around, and it was barely hanging on. So like with the Great Depression, U.S. banks collapse. There's no one to loan money to Germany. Germany can't pay their loans to France and England. They start defaulting on their debts to the U.S., and it's just an awful cycle falls apart. So if this recession is able to be curtailed, like it is in this alternate timeline, this triangle can stay stable and the Weimar Republic can develop, you know, the financial independence it needs, I feel, without we having rise of nationalism in that part of Europe. And really, for that matter, I feel like Western Europe, nationalism, like of not fascism and communism movements, aren't going to be, I guess, as popular because people go to the extremes during desperate times and economic recessions are desperate times. So obviously the Soviets are still going to be doing their own thing. But I think in terms of Germany, France, and England, I think that they're going to be more stable. And I think that we're not going to see a rise in fascism. Of course, Italy will be fascist because that's been that was since the 20s, I believe.
Yeah, 1922.
22, yeah. So Mussolini would still be in power. But honestly speaking, Mussolini, other than invading Ethiopia, I don't think really he would have been able to do much else. Even Ethiopia, he barely won.
I think it's also important to mention as well, if you want to skip on to the causes of World War II, from what I've seen, or at least from what I've seen a little bit, is that you could also say part of the reason as to why the fascists wanted to invade Poland specifically, at least Germany in 1939, was because of the fact is that the fascist economic system was to collapse as well. So I think that's also important to note. But I still think in this scenario, there's definitely going to be no Nazi Germany, as stated before. However, I do want to switch it over to domestically, because I think in order to fully comprehend it, we also must look at the fact is that one of the most important presidents in American history is not going to be elected.
FDR,
100%. Yeah, he's not going to be elected. And I'm not saying that in 1932. I'm saying just in general, he would not be elected. Because if this conservative administration, we're going to say that the Republicans successfully make the turn around the Great Depression, or the recession at this point, would be the recession of 1929-1930. Let's just say they turn it around by, say, 1931. Well, yes, we would definitely see a big midterm for the Democrats. But yeah, as we definitely would not see as big of a gain in terms of the midterms. We definitely would see, we could definitely see a Democratic gain of the House as well in this scenario. I don't think we're not going to see a Republican shift, at least. FDR, in a sense, I think that's very important to mention. FDR is not going to be elected in this scenario, and I don't think that they're going to go for a more, in a sense, liberal/progressive type of person. And I don't mean I'm not talking about nowadays, but I'm talking about the FDR liberal, the New Deal liberal is what they would be referred to as, the New Deal coalition. So but he would not be elected in this scenario, I feel at least.
So yeah, going off that, Nick, do you think that there'd still like have the cycle of like the boom bust cycle, like there'd be a panic every 20 years?
I mean, to a certain extent, we already do. If you want to look at, say, we could just take from 1940 onwards, we could say 1945 to 1946, 47, even though it was not a recession, it was still a very high
slowdown, right?
Very high inflationary period. 8% in 1945, 14% in 1946, 8% in 1947. And I can tell you those are correct numbers there. And there's also the fact that that was also coming off of wage controls, price controls, a lot of other interventionist stuff. Then comes the prosperity of the 1950s. Even into the 60s, there was a lot of prosperity up until maybe I'd say the late 60s, where a lot of like riots, unfortunately, race riots, of course, with in 1968 after the shooting and death of Martin Luther King. But there was also the Vietnam riots as well. But we're going to touch upon that as well. But with the boom bust cycle following along, even though it might be a little bit late, around 1971, we do see that occurring. The next bust would be in 1991, actually, with George Bush. It's why he lost the election in 92. I'm sorry, not 91, but 92. So around 20 years afterwards, then we saw the somewhat of a bust in 2002, 2003 with the dot-com burst. Or was that 2001? I don't remember. But sometime during the early 2000s,
I think around 99, 2000, so yeah.
But right around 2000, there was a dot-com burst, of course, maybe 10 years, but But if you want to get more specific, 20 years from now, there was the Great Recession, of course, of 2008, as we all know. And I do think that boom-bust cycle is still in effect today, for sure.
And another thing I thought noticed, because, you know, Franklin, FDR, he passed acts such as Social Security and the FDIC. So Social Security is huge. I mean, it gives retirees an income. And before this time, you know, a lot of retirees were in poverty, essentially. So Social Security kind of took them out of that. And also gave jobs to younger people. Now, too, because those openings were there. And another thing was FDIC, because it insured people's bank accounts up to $250,000. So when, you know, your local bank failed, for example, because it does happen. I mean, it still does happen. I was watching an interesting documentary on this recently. And, you know, it's really cool. Like, you don't even notice that the bank is collapsing. The government just comes in and keeps that money there until another bank comes and purchases it, or someone else purchases those assets. So it just transfers like that, very smoothly. But now, with the FDIC, for example, deregulations, now you're going to have your banks sometimes failing, and people's savings are just going to be lost like that. So I'm curious, what do you think? I don't think anything similar is going to be passed. What do you think, though?
With a Republican Congress and with a Republican president? No, I don't see it getting passed. And I do think we'll see during the 1930s, even though there was a lot of social instability and economic instability as a result of this Great Depression, I still do feel there's going to be these people such as, I believe, Charles Coughlin, for example, who was a Catholic preacher who was in favor of distributism. And he was one of the big pushers behind Social Security and sense protection for the elderly as well.
Right.
Oh, no, my bad. He was not the big protector. It was some other guy. I forgot who. Bunch of names, but. But Charles Coughlin, I assume there will definitely still be figures such as Charlie Coughlin. There's a lot of big characters in the 30s. Oh, Huey Long as well. Because like people such as Huey Long, I do still see getting elected. Because Louisiana would still be poor, unfortunately, during the time period. And we would see that whole share of the wealth thing. However, I kind of want to look into the United States towards the 30s. The United States in the 1930s and this there, while I don't think it would be 100% like it wouldn't be 100% like the same as it was in the 1920s, but it'd be a relative time of economic stability. If you get where I'm going at here.
Yes, yeah, so not like a huge growth, but it's not necessarily going down either. It's more of a stable, steady growth.
It's stable, exactly. And I think that's also with an extent as well, is that a lot of New Deal policies, let's admit here, the New Deal in a sense, and I don't know if you would agree with this, but the New Deal in a sense worked in its purpose in one of the three R's. So the three R's, if you don't know, is relief, recovery, and reform. And I would say accomplished two of the R's here. It accomplished relief and reform. The relief came through the Public Works Act, such as the PWA, the Public Works Administration, the Tennessee River Valley Administration, which was electricity, and a couple other public works, such as the Hoover Dam, et cetera, et cetera.
A lot of public infrastructure projects, building infrastructure. And
exactly, building infrastructure and stuff like that. And we also have, for example, with reform, for example, one of the big things you mentioned, well, two of the big things you mentioned would be the FDIC and Social Security. That's two huge reforms right there. You could also say, for example, the Wagner Act was a big reform as well. I don't see a Wagner Act getting passed under a conservative Republican administration. But no, that's where I do have to admit, at least there was at least two out of the three R's accomplished. But in terms of recovery did not happen under the New Deal.
Oh yeah, I think I would say the war is really what recovered our
that's
economy.
That's sure what generally people agree with. With the whole recovery comes from the war rather than the New Deal in a sense. However, I think we should just get back rolling because we're around what, like 24 minutes at this point? Look at the time, we're going talking a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we haven't had an episode in a long time, so why not? So continuing domestically, at least, I think one of the hugest things, and as a proponent of the gold standard would not be eliminated. As you know, in the early 1930s, during FDR's administration, FDR would eliminate the gold standard and would actually confiscate gold. The gold standard would only be pseudo reintroduced with the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944, but it was more so the facto, in a sense, where the U.S. dollar was based off the gold standard. And the world currency was based off the U.S. dollar. So literally any currency could be translated to U.S. dollar, which itself would be translated to gold, yada, yada, yada. And so I think then if we're going to go into 1936 in a sense, who would win the 1936? Do we have any perennial candidates here? Like, who do you think? I think one at least for the Democratic Party. I think they're going to try to go for more a conservative candidate. And I'm going to lean more towards John Nance Garner, who was actually, as a matter of fact, a very famous individual during the time period. In fact, he was involved in politics. Well, let's see. He was involved in politics as early as 1898, as a matter of fact, which means he was old, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he actually was a long-standing House member from 1903 to 1930, well, 1933 in actual history. But I'd say he'd still be a standing House member as well. So I think, because since he is more of a conservative in the sense, I feel like he would probably be the best candidate available for them. In terms of
I would agree too, because I feel like
party.
Democrats, they can't really try something too progressive because the people aren't going to want to see that. Because, like, I mean, for the most part, the economy is relatively stable. There's like no need for like massive government intervention, right? So, I feel
Precisely.
That a more conservative president, economically speaking, is going to have to be more important for Democrats if they want to get some seats and a chance at the presidency.
That's something I would agree with.
And I think Cactus Jack, as John Nance Garner was known by his nickname, I think he's a great example of this. I mean, in the actual timeline, he was served as the vice president of FDR for one of his terms. And I think overall, I think he would be good. He was part of the House. He's from Texas. He was a Speaker of the House of Representatives. And I think that he would be one of those good politicians for the Democratic Party, like you said, Nick.
Exactly. And coming into 1936, I think is interesting. So who would the Republicans exactly choose? Because, I mean, I would say it's hard to pick here who the Republicans would choose here.
I feel like, and the reason there's not many good candidates this time around, I think, is like John Nance Garner, he was planning to run in 32, but then he decided to become FDR's VP, right? So for 36, the Republicans didn't really have a plan. Because FDR was pretty popular throughout the country, so they just threw Alf Landon in there because no one else really. Like, I think we looked at this at a different episode as well. There wasn't really like a good candidate, if I remember correctly. So I feel like in 36, obviously the Republicans had the presidency for 8 years now, and I feel like they're gonna have
16,
a host
actually at this point. It would be 16.
Yeah. So I meant like this term, but yeah, 16. So. They're definitely going to have to try to find someone else because I know Alf Landon is not the guy they want.
Yeah, Alf Landon was a lame duck candidate, if you want to consider that, a lame duck candidate. But looking into it, I do think that probably one of the candidates that would potentially be prevalent would be Arthur Vandenberg, who was a senator for a long time, but he wasn't a senator for a long time at that point. He was introduced in 1928 into the Senate via appointment by the Michigan governor, but he would become one of the most famous senators in American history. And actually, he would be honored as one of the seven greatest senators of all time. Well, originally there was five, but then he was introduced along with Robert Wagner as one of the other two, I believe, in 2005, 2004. I could be wrong on the date there, but he still was well known during that time period. And so I think Vandenberg could potentially be that candidate in 36, especially since he was considered potentially to be a candidate as well. And it's also important to note that he still does have his non-interventionist views, since he would change that after 1945, when the war would finally end.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would be a good candidate for the Republican Party this timeline. As you said, he would go on to become one of the best, or one of the most well-known, most important senators in U.S. history. So I think he would be a good candidate for the Republican Party. And I would you want to go ahead? That's fine. You go.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah, I would say that Vandenberg would probably end up winning the presidency too. Because my rationale is this, like, the people are happy with the Republican Party because, like I said, the economy is doing stable now. And I mean, for the most part, it's not like the Democrats are really giving anything different because they chose a very conservative Democrat. So it's going to be somewhat similar. I mean, of course, it's still Democratic versus Republican. It's going to be different, but I feel like the people are going to go with Vandenberg because the Republican Party helped really get America out of the Great Depression, and this time the recession, right?
No, that would be President Loudon in that circumstance.
What?
It'd be Loudon.
Oh, yeah, President Vandenberg Loudon.
Vandenberg was not really in the White House, and he didn't really.
No, I know.
But Republicans were credited in general.
I was giving the party credit.
Okay. So I think one important thing to mention as well with 36 is that the Democrats could run on a dark horse. Say FDR maybe wants to run in 36, which I don't know if that would happen, but I think another dark horse could potentially be Huey Long, especially if he isn't assassinated as well. But otherwise, that will be it for this episode of Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. I know it took a long time for us to finally get an episode up after, I believe, at least 3 months, maybe. But we're finally back, and we're going to try to be more consistent.
Yeah, hopefully season 5 is more consistent than season 4. I know, like, season 4 just randomly, like, just didn't upload for a week or two. But hopefully season 5 will be more consistent. Months. Yep.
Yeah, we had a bunch of tests, you know. We had the SATs, the ACTs. We had a lot of stuff, you know, to prepare for school and everything as well. So, fortunately, it's the summer coming up on that soon. And we're looking forward to making new content, of course, man. So, if you guys do have any suggestions, please DM it to us on Twitter at BackToThePast1. Again, it is at BackToThePastP1. And we hope you enjoy your day.